make it better for people who are at home to be a part of us. And okay, so I told you I had a lot to do, so we're going to get with it. And I'm going to move with slides a lot today. And I'm going to do that because I know me, and I would be off on some of these proverbs and we wouldn't get anything accomplished. There's 31 proverbs. There's basically 31 days and a lot of months. I don't know whether the God intended for it. There's infinite wisdom for all these who involve themselves to separate scripture to come up with 31 chapters in Proverbs. So we'd have one a day, but it's kind of neat that that's the way it is, because it would actually be very helpful to us if we read one chapter of Proverbs every single day before we started. Maybe we don't have time to do a lot of things, but we could read one chapter in Proverbs. And Proverbs is just a tremendous book. It's noteworthy that the book of Proverbs, with its emphasis on our godly living, follows Psalms with its relationship on a godly relationship, a vertical relationship. Remember, Jesus said to love the Lord thy God with all your heart and with all your mind, with all your soul, and to love your neighbor as yourself. There can't be a more vertical, horizontal statement than that one. That we have a responsibility vertically with God. That's primary, that's first. But it's also very important that we understand the relationship that we have with each other. I don't believe you can be what you ought to be vertically until you understand the importance of the horizontal relationship. So Psalm speaks to us about spending our time on our knees in prayer in a very vertical book, while Proverbs tells us how to spend time on our feet dealing with each other. Psalms deepens our devotional life, while Proverbs equips us to cope with daily life and other people. It's just a fabulous book to help us, that God has given us in our dealing with each other. It's not okay for us to mistreat one another. That's what Proverbs is about. It's not okay for us to get in our relationships a sourness where we have opposite views on similar subjects, particularly those things that are spiritual in nature, and they were accepting of that. Instead, we need to sharpen one another, as the Proverbs would tell us. So many things that we could talk about. Proverbs is said to be a practical earthly book that tells us how to get along with our fellow man. It's a book full of what dictionaries call maxims, and they help us to equip us specifically with wisdom, thankful for the prayer that was just led, with discernment, discipline, and discretion. Solomon is its author, of that I have little doubt. It is said of him, in fact, in 1 Kings chapter 4, verses 29 to 32, that he spoke 3,000 proverbs and his songs were 1,005. On our slide here, I'm going to fly through these points, and so I can get to the end, hopefully, with you still having some time to comment. Solomon sought out and set in order many proverbs in Ecclesiastes 12 and verse 9. The three separations or distinctions being made within the book. Most books in the Bible that we study, even the ones up until now, are much better studied contextually. That we stay within the context and that we understand that verse 1 and verse 10 and verse 20 should be read together in order for us to understand the complete background setting of a particular passage. It's the reason why, for example, all things that work together for them that love the Lord is so misused. That passage is true, but it has nothing to do with the fact that if your child gets hurt or damaged or something bad happens to a family member, that all things are going to work together for you. That's not what that passage is talking about. And we need to go back to context and understand it's talking about Holy Spirit intervention involvement that happens to people when they walk with God. And when we walk with God, guess what? All things are going to work together for that person. You see, that's what that's saying. Now, this is not about that text or about that lesson. Save that for another day. It's just simply to say Proverbs is not like that. It's disjointed. It jumps around. It can't be studied contextually. Oh, there are pieces of it, chapter 1 and 2 in particular, maybe chapter 5 and 6, 31, that can be done contextually, but most of it moves around quite a bit, and we'll find that as we study it. We're going to spend some time talking about a few proverbs, but I hope you read it, and I hope that, and I look forward to Chuck doing some specific lessons from Proverbs, because I'll not be able to spend any time on most of these verses. We're going to talk about those three lenses in a little bit. Wisdom is especially for the young, in the three divisions that I have for you, chapters 1 through 9, chapters 10:1 through chapter 31:9, and then the text itself on the virtuous or worthy woman in chapter 31, verses 10 through 31. The emphasis being on the fear of the Lord. And I think that we need, in 1:7, that's the essence of Proverbs. We can't begin to be wise, we can't begin to get knowledge, we can't begin to have discretion until we acknowledge the fact that God is God and I am not. And then we need to respect His Word. And there needs to be about that word fear, I'll talk about it in just a second so I won't go off on it too much, an awesomeness about that word. That our God transcends anything that a human being can ever do and ever will do. And He's awesome. And so when Solomon concludes at the end of Ecclesiastes to fear God and keep His commandments, it's more than respect. It's a fear and an awesomeness about it that Moses had when he took his shoes off before God because he was on holy ground. It's an absolute respect that God is God and I am not, an awesomeness. When His Word is read, we just quiver with the words that are being read. We stand like they did in the time of Nehemiah because of the awesomeness of the words that come from God. And we're in the presence of His voice, not literally, but as it's being read, we are hearing words, Holy Spirit, inspired words that have been revealed by God for us to understand who He is. And there needs to be an absolute respect for that. And when we don't do what God tells us to do, we need to be afraid. And we are not run from that word fear. There needs to be a understanding that God is to be respected. No, He demands respect. He requires respect. What does God require of you? Remember Micah 6 and verse 8. He demands something of us. And it begins with the fear of the Lord. You don't get that in Proverbs, you forget it. You might as well not even bother reading it. If you don't start with that premise that God is God and I am not, and I have to fear and respect His Word, then you're not going to get a whole lot out of what He has to say. You're never going to come to a discernment. You're never going to come to the knowledge you need to come to. You're not going to come to the wisdom you ought to have if you don't understand and appreciate that. So the fear of the Lord is the emphasis. The framework, we're going to talk about those three lenses. I talk about the style, a book filled with short statements to declare a profound truth, providing wisdom for life. Short sentences drawn from long experiences. I like that. And I think that's a good explanation. Now we're going to... Come on, baby. Oh. All right. For those of you at home, I'm having a malfunction. I think it's called technical malfunction. All right. I went all the way to the end. That's not good. And you can see how many slides I got. So, first of all, in talking about Proverbs, we've already mentioned that we're in the area of poetry. We've covered the books of law, history, and now we're in poetry. You see that over on the left. It's the 20th book of the Bible. We're studying Proverbs, which is the third book of the book of poetry. The Bible's not lined up chronologically. And whenever they put the Bible together, They were divided by sections that had topical type of information. They put it together the way it made sense to them at the time. So they made it the books of law, the books of history, the books of poetry, and those line up one right after another. And that's the way the Bible is presented to us and the way it is in the one that you read. After we get through with poetry, then we'll go into major prophets, and then minor prophets and the gospels. And then the letters and what they call prophecy, I would call apocalyptic, but the book of Revelation. So anyway, just to mention, that's something we've already talked about. I wanted you to see it again. And then there's Brother Harkrider's excellent quote out of his little workbook commentary series on Proverbs. He says, "Knowledge is important in our society, and concerns for a good education are natural and justified. But does one have real knowledge for living life in the fullest if all he has is secular knowledge? Our nation has the highest percentage of educated citizens of any prior generation, yet violence, dishonesty, sexual immorality, financial chaos, and broken homes often seem to be the norm." Now, this was written several years ago. I don't think anybody would take exception to that today, and that's kind of the way God's book is. "If secular knowledge and material prosperity do not guarantee a meaningful inner peace and contentment, what will?" The book of Proverbs provides the answer. Proverbs, Brother Harkrider says, teaches one to fear the Lord and is the foundation for real knowledge. Just an emphasis on what we've already said about Proverbs being a book that begins with us, first of all, having a respect for God. One that has us completely in awe of who He is. All right? So, wisdom comes from the Hebrew word chokmah, which means skillful or prudent. It's found 101 times in Proverbs, and it defines the central theme, which is wisdom. Wisdom is personified in the book of Proverbs, in the feminine. It's called Sophia, the Greek word is. And so by personified, what I mean is wisdom is as if it's a person. Chapter 31, Proverbs 31, especially sets that out for us. It's not that that is a woman that was specifically known during that time, but if you're looking for a worthy woman, here it is. It's personified in chapter 31. We see it in this particular woman. Some argue that it was a woman that was known. I don't particularly believe that. I think it's just what it is, a personification of wisdom. Morris Meredith says, "Wisdom enables one to turn every good thing in life to its rightful purpose. It is something more than wit, shrewd, common sense, or even intellectual intelligence, in that it implies a spiritual and moral quality of heart, will, and life, and the practical application of knowledge to its best ends." Good comment. And then J. A. Moiter, one of my favorite, he's one of my favorite, actually, in commentaries. "This personification of wisdom is not a mere literary device. It reflects the essential nature of biblical wisdom. Wisdom is embodied." That's just what we're saying. Wisdom is for living. In fact, nothing is truly known until it is lived out in the everyday world. Wisdom personified, wisdom applied. Proverbs is about wisdom. It begins with the fear of the Lord. And that's the point that we simply want to make. We're not going to talk so much about verse-to-verse study in Proverbs. We don't have time for that. There's no way I could do that. It's more to understand kind of what's behind the book and what's in it a little bit, generally speaking. So wisdom is contrasted to folly, and there are five Hebrew words that are used for the word folly that I could find. They're all used in Proverbs. It's interesting that you'll find that. Again, I can't spend time on all this, but looking at the passages, but they're there. Anybody wants all this can sure have it. By the way, this is work that I've done on, I have a whole 14, 15 part series on Proverbs. So I pulled some of these slides from that, and some of you young people are younger people that are here today have sat in that class before. I love teaching the class on Proverbs. So if I can teach 15 lessons on it, and I'm trying to put it all into one, you can imagine the job I have this morning. But I think it's important for us to see this contrast. From the Greek word, kessel, if that's how it's pronounced, or kessel, foolish, stupid, inclined to make poor choices, lacks knowledge, lacks prudence or understanding, rejects wisdom, knowledge, and discernment, express their folly, trust in themselves, mishandle money and provisions, enjoy evil, and hate to turn from it. They are deceptive, speak in haste, slander perversely, angrily, reckless, out of control, dangerous, cause strife. That's a fool, according to Proverbs. Passages for all those. All right? And then there's the wise, considered wise when silent, despised, and that's not what I meant to say. There's a second definition for fool, evil. Similar but more emphatic. It delights in folly, considered wise when silent, despised and reject wisdom. Serve the wise, bound up in a child's heart, hard to remove, feed on folly, repeat their folly, quarrelsome and quick-tempered. They're burdensome, are punished, ruined, and bring disaster to themselves. Fools depicted by Solomon well in trying to help us to understand that this is what you don't want to be. You want to be wise, not you want to be this, not that. Solomon does that a lot. It's done a lot in Proverbs. We'll see as we continue looking at contrast. Other words for folly, Nabal, which means stupid, run and bring disaster, Proverbs 17:7, other passages. Pari, simple or naive, immature, gullible, inexperienced, easily enticed. List, scornful, deriding, proud, and arrogant. Choose your Hebrew word. Solomon's telling us not to be a fool, but to be wise. See the contrast? All right, moving on. This fool trusts in himself. He refuses instruction. He's deaf to it. He won't listen to it. He knows it all. He's opinionated. He talks too much. He cannot be disciplined. He's impulsive. He commits evil. He's stubborn. He's a sluggard or lazy. All those are Proverbs. Those are all taken from Proverbs, and if you look at each one of those verses, verse by verse, which we just can't do, you would find in them the full definition of a fool. And what that means, if you're lazy, you're a fool. Does everybody see that? I mean, and if you fear God, you're going to respect the fact that my laziness is making me a fool, and my vertical relationship with God needs to be fixed. If I'm going to please God, I need to quit being lazy. If I tend toward anger, that's not okay with God. You're a fool, Solomon says. Don't be angry. Be wise and still have control of your temper. Now, if you got a problem with anger, then fix it. That's what Proverbs is about. You follow? We'll see that as we continue. I wish I had more time to talk about all these. And then there's the heart in Proverbs, and not the heart that pumps the blood that keeps us alive. Well, that's critical to our survival, isn't it? Well, Solomon uses the word heart that way to talk about how critical the heart is in our relationship with God, in our vertical and our horizontal relationship. He talks about the scheming heart, a cunning, sensual heart, a wise heart, a deceptive heart, a hurting or a sorrowful heart, a tranquil heart, a righteous heart, a glad heart, a haughty heart, a heart of fret or rage. Good sermon right there. Our heart matters. He tells us in chapter 4 and verse 23, from it springs all issues of life. Everything stems from that. And so our heart is everything. It's our heart, when we get it right, that fears the Lord, that helps us to be the knowledgeable person we need to be by respecting God and accumulating this wisdom that has nothing to do with education. It has everything to do with common sense and applying the knowledge we have. We'll talk about that as we continue. So the heart's very important. Our pure heart, left one, oh, and an envious heart, left two. All those are direct passages from Proverbs that talk about that subject. That's why Proverbs is important. You see how it jumps all over, though? Those are not within one chapter talking about the subject. You know, it's not about a nation of people who are struggling with their heart and some prophet or some person's identifying with that. It's just Solomon reflecting and writing these things down, or one of the other writers, for us to think about in our environment. And then there's the contrast, particularly about laziness. I don't know how much you know this, but you daddies particularly need to understand this. First of all, don't be lazy yourself. I tell young girls or young people all the time when I'm teaching a college class. Ladies, don't ever marry a liar or a lazy man. Period. Run. And that's the best advice if I had a daughter I could give her. If you find somebody who won't tell you the truth, you find somebody who won't work and sits on the couch while his daddy's mowing the lawn, marry somebody else. Go find somebody else. They're going to bring you nothing but misery. Now, that's a lesson for both the guys and the girls, because that's the girls, the message you're giving to them, but the guys are hearing that. And I'm talking about that, and it's trying to help. I went to somebody's house one time. I can't get off of these stories. But I'll tell this one. I went to this person's house one time, and just exactly the picture that I had here. Here was two teenage boys sitting on the couch playing video games while their dad was out in 90-degree weather and humidity in the Georgia area, sweating, mowing the lawn, and his kids were sitting on the couch in air conditioning playing with their video games. Now, I got a real problem with that. First of all, those boys ought to love their daddy enough and have enough respect for him to get off that couch and turn those video games off and go help him. Number two, that father needs to have enough respect for God to go make him get off that couch and get out there and help him. Don't let him take on that identity of laziness. It's a real problem in our society, and God says it's bad. You're a fool if you're lazy. He talks about it in one case as you're like a door that goes back and forth, you know. There's a lion in the street, and you don't even have the strength to go out and cry out to somebody that there's a lion in the street. That's phraseology and terminology that Solomon uses, or that you want the harvest, but you don't go do the work. Another thing Solomon talks about in Proverbs. All right, so this is that contrast. On one side, it brings poverty. It frustrates for all those who are lazy, puts one under tribute. It's obnoxious to other people. Nobody appreciates a lazy person. We shouldn't be one. The reason why I still mow my own lawn and wash my own car to this day is in large part because I'm scared to death I'll become lazy and violate this principle. I'm just telling you how it is. Now, it's not wrong for you to hire somebody to wash your car or mow your lawn. I'm not saying that. But I got this thing that as long as I'm able to do it, I need to get off the couch and go do something. Laziness is a sin. And so I try to keep myself active. Virtues of diligence, self-discipline, be motivated, always sufficient, happy, good reputation. I'm just trying to help us to understand that Proverbs has got all these contrasts in it. You see that? This is the fool and the wise. The lazy and the one who's diligent. The virtuous woman and the foolish woman. Hey, look at this. We don't have time to cover that. But you can imagine how interesting that is to sit down with a bunch of younger ladies and teach this. Nancy and I came up with this chart a long time ago. We were developing, we were working on camp, and we put this together. And look at the contrast. You got the foolish woman who is boisterous, makes a mockery of sense, deceptive and quarrelsome. The contentious woman is like a leaky faucet. She's dripping all the time. Better to live corner of a housetop with that contentious woman. Better to live in a desert than with a contentious woman. She's like slippery oil, loud, flatter, and stubborn, Solomon says. She's a sensual woman who's identifying too much with the flesh. She's suggestive with her words. She's known to be more sensual by her friends than she is spiritual. She's got a lack of spiritual commitment. Her appearance is not godly. Her attitude and her slothfulness can be identified. She stands on the corner to be seen. She stands in the light so she can be seen. You know, all these things Solomon talks about. The indiscreet woman, as we said already, sexual immorality, she works at this seduction, she makes herself seen. Contrasted to that, and all these are from Proverbs or some passages that are a kinship to the passage. Here's the wise woman who fears the Lord. Here's the gracious woman. Here's a virtuous woman and the godly woman, one who builds and orders her house and develops a caring spirit, cultivates the skill of her hands, learns how to handle money. Look at that one versus the foolish woman. Can you see the contrast? Is Solomon not trying to help us understand the difference between a fool and a wise person, ladies? I mean, this is for you. that Solomon's saying, if you want to be wise, do this. If you want to be a fool, then do this. And yet I see some young ladies that, you know, that look just like the rest of the world. That's as sweet as I know how to put it in the way they dress. That's not the way the child of God should look. That's not the Christian woman that Solomon's talking about. And there are far too few women and men who appreciate and fear God enough to respect this. And that's too bad. That's a shame. Ladies, be careful how you dress. Be careful how you're seen, observed by people in the public. Be careful how your children see you. Can you imagine what must go on in the mind of a child when they have a mother on one side who talks about being virtuous and on the other side doesn't wear it? That's sad. Same thing with the father, isn't it? Same thing that could be said to father. But so many specific things about the woman. I want us to see the contrast. Look at that. Man, I've got to go. So then there's these three lenses. First of all, what is the theme? It's the fear of the Lord. Fear comes from the term yara, and is the common word used in the Old Testament for fear. It means in its threefold usage, dread, terror, to stand in awe, to revere, to respect. Authors, as we said, are Solomon. Undoubtedly, there was wise men who wrote some of these proverbs that generally referred to. There's Agur, which means gatherer or collector. I don't know much about him. Neither does anybody else. Lemuel, in chapter 31, who gives a counsel to the young man about being a leader or kingship, if you will, and warns him about wine and the sparklet of wine and the effect of alcohol and things that are good for us to study. There's Hezekiah, who recorded many of, we think, of the Proverbs we now read about 300 years after the time of Solomon. And so he's responsible for some of the Proverbs as well. So Solomon is an interesting character. His acquisition of wisdom, his fame for wisdom, and his downfall. The first half of his kingship versus the last kingship. He's an author, and it's impossible for us not to say, how can somebody so wise be so stupid? Isn't it? How could somebody who prayed to God for wisdom, given that measure of wisdom, how could he? Well, that's easy. Because the answer is that having all this knowledge and all this wisdom is no good unless you apply it. Wisdom from God, listen to me now. The difference between the wisdom that man seeks is the wisdom God is calling for is that which we see through His eyes. It's not through our eyes because we're temporal. We see things physically, but when we see things through God's eyes, that's real wisdom. In the latter part of chapter 1, Solomon talks about that wisdom and he says that if you stand in the street and it cries out to you and you don't listen, it's going to be like a whirlwind. It's going to come back and get you. Well, that's important for us to understand that when we don't see wisdom the way God expects us and apply it the way you're supposed to, it's not going to work the way God intended for it to work. If I get out of sorts with somebody in a relationship and discredit and don't pay attention to things that are given to me by God about how to deal with that person. If I'm offended by somebody and I don't go to him directly and try to get that corrected, Matthew chapter 18, I shouldn't be shocked or surprised whenever things don't work out the way the kingdom that God intended for it to happen. We shouldn't be surprised when the kingdom is hurt and damaged because of that. That's a lack of wisdom. When we get up in front of people, for example, and say something that's divisive and hurts the congregation, that lacks wisdom. That's personal. That's somebody who might have knowledge about a subject, and in their own mind they might see it wise, but is it wise in God's eyes, you see? Is that what God wants for the kingdom? And that's what Solomon's calling us to do, to see that the knowledge that we have comes from God's word and is rightly applied through God's eyes, as God looks upon his subjects, as God would have it to be. We would do things a lot different if we would think of it in those terms. All right. So what is a proverb? Proverbs is a practical earthly book that tells us how to get along with our fellow man. It's a book full of maxims, where he talked about And it comes from that Hebrew word, Michelle, which means to represent, be like, similar, a likeness. It comes from the Latin word, proverbia, which means in place of words or four words. And they are short statements filled with profound truths. And they're generally two-line couplets. And the proverb is something we typically use. A stitch in time saves nine. A penny saved, a penny earned. An apple a day keeps the doctor away. The better remain silent, thought a fool, and speak up and move all doubt. When I'm doing the college class, I have them do their own proverb. Go home, write a proverb. Doesn't have to be spiritual, just write one. Because I want them to understand, you know, what a proverb is and how it was written during that time. One of the things that, you know, I think as we're thinking about this text, this passage, is to see that the purpose of Proverbs is, as we read in Proverbs 1, 2 through 6, to know wisdom and instruction, to understand words of insight, to receive instruction in wise dealing and righteousness, justice, and equity, to give prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the youth. Let the wise hear an increase in learning, and the one who understands obtain guidance. To understand a proverb and a saying, the words of the wise and their riddles. To give reverence to their heart, it says. To provide discernment to the eye. To develop alertness in the walk. To establish a discretion and purpose in life. To cultivate keenness of mind. Proverbs is important because it helps us with all that. How are you bent? Might be a way I would say that. What do I mean by that? Well, what are you inclined to do with your money? Where does it go? If you answer that question, you're going to find out how you're bent. Grandkids. Some form of entertainment. Golf. You're going to find out what I like. So, Proverbs helps us to find out how we're bent. Where our thoughts are. What our inclination is. Where our heart is. And we need to learn it and apply it in a proper way. That's what this is telling us. So there's two major purposes, I think, to give us moral skills and to give us mental discernment. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. No one can be wise or skillful in living without fearing the Lord and heeding His commandments. A lot of people define wisdom as being skillful in living. Not a bad definition. So this is actually the end of it, Proverbs, and if I get this done, I'm going to be really proud of myself. So the first lens, it has to do with this background of subject and statements. It was on your chart. And there's three demonstrations of couplings. When you read Proverbs, you're going to find, number one, either a contrasting coupling. These stand on their own are not usually connected with what precedes or follows it. Here's one of those. Whoever despises his neighbor is a sinner, but blessed is he who is generous to the poor. You see the bold but? The word but helps us to see it's a contrasting. It's contrasting one versus the other. A wise son hears his father's instruction, but a scoffer does not listen to rebuke. Contrastive. Coupling, chapter 13, verse 1. And then there's a completive coupling. And usually when I'm doing a Proverbs class, we'll do a dozen of each of these, or so, a half a dozen. Completive coupling generally includes the word and. 11:25, whoever brings will be enriched, and one who waters will himself be watered. The word and completes the thought. Then there's 14:13, even in laughter, the heart may ache and the end of joy may be grief. So there's a contrastive coupling, there's a completive coupling. And I show on this completive coupling, we'll often expand on the first part of the coupling. So gracious words are like a honeycomb, sweetness to the soul and health to the body. 16:24. A completion of a particular thought. Maybe I'm going too deep in this, but I want us to understand how the Proverbs are written. And then number three, there's a comparative coupling, generally using the words better or than or like or so. Better is a little with righteousness than great revenues with injustice, 16:8. Better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure and trouble with it. That's a completing or comparative coupling. Like cold water to a thirsty soul, so is a good news from a far country. Like a gold ring in a pig snout. I put in parentheses, so is a beautiful woman without discretion. I just want us to see that these proverbs, when you understand them that way, help us a little bit. When you're reading them, you can say, oh, this is one of those type of, it's helped me in my study of Proverbs anyway. So then there's the people and problems part of this. And as I said, Proverbs is all about relationships. I'm told there are 187 references to people in the book. 46 men and 23 women. I didn't check this, by the way. So I don't know if this is accurate, but I think it makes the point. There's the simple, the wise, the proud, the humble, the violent, the angry, the rich, the poor, the oppressor, the oppressed, sluggards, liars, and slanders. And they're all contrasted with the diligent, the truthful, and the peacemakers. Proverbs is a contrasting book, contrasting this versus that. And if you'll think of it that way, it'll help you in your study of it. Once you see a statement made about something, you're almost sure you're going to be able to find the opposite within Proverbs. You with me? One of the most pronounced contrasts is seen in the adulterous woman personified throughout that of the worthy woman, the flesh and blood embodiment in Proverbs 31. Now, this is what I want you to see. This is important right here. I wanted to make sure I got to this slide. So, Proverbs is about, and I'm not going to be able to let you do summary today. I got to finish this. Hope you all forgive me. Proverbs is about problems and solving problems. Are you with me? We're talking about, this is important. You're important to me. I'm not okay with you being mad at me. Are you hearing me? I want you to love me more than you will ever know. Not because I deserve it, but I want it anyway. Tell me how. Tell me how to love you and I'll do it. Tell me what I need to do and I'll do it. That's what I do with her. When she tells me what she needs, I give it to her. You should be able to do that with me. Can you? Can you come to me and tell me what you need and know that I will give it to you? Now, if it's within my ability, that's how I love you. If you love me, keep my commandments. How do you tell Jesus you love him? How do you tell people you love him? You fulfill their needs. Proverbs is about fulfilling needs. Now watch. Here's how these problems that come up in our life. Here's the way we handle them. One of four ways. Oh man, I didn't want to hear that. First of all, we go around them. There's four ways. Just avoid them altogether. Deflect them somewhere else. I'm angry, but I'm not going to think about it. I'm just not going to deal with it. Second of all, we blame it on somebody else. Not my problem. I'm angry because my dad was angry. He tended to be angry. It's in my blood. It's the way I am. Solomon deals with that. Some just say it's hopeless. Give up. I'm angry. I'll always be angry. I can't fix it. People can't take me for the way I am. Up their nose, the rubber hose. You know. And then there's the fourth way. People, that's Proverbs. Right here. That's the book that God has given us. If you've got a severed relationship and you want to fix it, read Proverbs. If you're mad at somebody and you want to fix it, read Proverbs. If you had a broken relationship at home, read Proverbs. If you want to know how to train your children, read Proverbs. Don't read some book from Dr. Spock or whoever the modern day guy is. Read Proverbs. And I think therein lies the rub. We don't do that. And consequently, we have more problems in the church than we ought to have. That's how we'll fix it. Then there's a final point, the counseling and the correction. You all have heard me say this over again. Chapter 12, verse 1 should be circled in every Bible and every home in America. He who refuses wise counsel is, somebody say it. Boy, we don't like that word, do we? Holy Spirit used it. In Hebrew, it says brutish. Same thing. Every other translation that I know of says stupid. And that's what we are when we don't listen to counsel of God. It's like a whirlwind that will come back and get us when we don't listen to wisdom crying out to us. When we don't listen and pay attention. We don't try to fix our problems. And we still try to do one of those other three options. Train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it. 22:6. My son, be attentive to my wisdom. Incline your ear to my understanding, so you may keep your discretion, and your lips may guard knowledge. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. That's the last slide. Back to that slide. And I think I covered all I wanted to cover. And I am 10 times sorry that I didn't have a lot of time left for you to talk. But there is time for a comment or two if somebody wants to say something. I went fast, didn't I? As Ken said, probably about Job. I think I remember him saying it. Too much information sometimes. But yes. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for saying thank you. That's Proverbs. Are you hearing me? This is not vertical we're talking about now. I'm not saying God's not pleased with Calvin doing that with me, but you know what that did for my horizontal relationship with Calvin? Can you see that's important? Whole book's written about it. So it's not, I'll say it one more time, it is not okay for you to have a severed relationship with somebody and please God. Fix it. It is not okay for you to be mad at somebody. Fix it. Now there's sometimes you can't do anything to fix it. You've done all you can do. I'm not talking about that. I understand that. Happens within families and outside families. But you do what you can before God to fix any challenge or problem you have in a relationship, and you'll be blessed because of it. And one who fears the Lord understands and values and appreciates the importance of all that. Okay? Anybody else comment? For those of you at home, Calvin said, for those of you who didn't hear, that he liked the class and thanked me for it. That was my comments. Taryn says that he and Mark love us more. So there you know. There'll be a ballot box in the back for him. Anybody else? I'm sorry again to go so fast. I hope this is helpful. Next week, get to Ecclesiastes, which I like just about as much as Proverbs. All right. And then at that point, Ken will do Isaiah, and I'll be gone that Sunday. Thank you.